This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Welcome to Off the Shelf with Roger Waldron of the Coalition for Government Procurement. Off the Shelf gives a voice to commercial service and product companies selling in the federal market. Roger speaks to members and government officials about procurement policy trends, innovations, and debates. Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Now, your host, Roger Waldron.
Welcome to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Today, my guest is David Drapkin. David is Corporate Director for Acquisition Policy at Northrop Grumman. And David has a long career in the federal government, both at the Department of Defense and at the General Services Administration as a senior leader in government procurement policy. David, welcome to the show. It's great to have you on.
Thanks, Roger. I'm glad to be here.
Well, David, with your experience, and I know, you know, we actually, for sake of full disclosure, we worked together at GSA for a number of years. You know, first thing, just given your life in procurement and where we're going to start, you know, one of the questions I wanted to ask you is about this, you know, the cliche, the pendulum swing, and where are we? We all know the 90s was an era of trying to streamline the acquisition process, commercial item contracting, changes in the schedules and other creation of multiple award IDIQ contracts, that sort of thing. And, you know, the last decade's seen, I think, a severe pendulum swing, and I think I still think it's still swinging, that, you know, sort of potentially the wrong way, let's say, to more continuing oversight and, you know, and processes and procedures, rather than efficiency. What's your take on things?
Well, first of all, thank you very much for inviting me to be here, Roger. I need to say at the outset that anything that I say on the show in response to your question is my opinion and not the opinion of Northrop Grumman. Having said that...
Well, it's always good to get that disclaimer in there.
Well, I want to keep my job.
Absolutely, I understand that.
I would say that actually the pendulum analysis isn't appropriate. I think as a result of a historical analysis, if you look at the times at which our country was at war... And you will see that the relationship between the government and the contractor or the industry base was adversarial almost. And while at those times when the country was at peace, there seemed to be more of an approach of partnership and working together. We've been at war now since sometime in 2001, and the relationship between the government contractors and the industrial base and the government has gotten progressively more adversarial, in no small part because I think the American people as a whole don't like the idea of war profiteers. They don't want companies to make a profit at the expense of the taxpayers when, at least in theory, the taxpayers are making sacrifices to support the war abroad. And so when the procurement of goods and services over doubled since 1999. It actually over tripled since 1991. The focus on making sure that companies were not taking advantage of the government when the government was buying lots and lots of stuff, a technical term
right,
that we,
right,
we
yeah.
all use. I think that focus has gotten grown and grown. And hopefully, once the war in Afghanistan is over and we are back to a relative state of peace around the world, at least as far as the U.S.'s involvement, the relationship between government contractors and the government will improve. In addition, we are now in a time of austerity, whereas the last decade or so we were spending money at very large sums of money, and we were increasing what we spent each year. Back in the 90s, you may recall, we had the same experience. You know, it was the wall came down, and
right, yep.
The people expected a peace dividend. And the way the Congress and the president back in the 90s approached paying the peace dividend was to reduce the budgets for government agencies, particularly in the area of procurement, in advance, and then telling the government agencies that they needed to become more efficient and effective in how they bought things and used them in order to absorb the cuts that they'd already made in the budget. You may remember that Vice President Gore, under the Clinton administration, had the reinvention
campaign, and the Hammer Awards.
And the Hammers Award.
Right.
All focused on streamlining processes,
yep.
Focused on being more commercial-like in nature. That's how that administration in that time of our history responded. It seems that we're getting a much different response right now in response to the austerity and budget. Instead of looking to bring industry in closer and working on ways to reducing the cost of doing business and the way in which people buy things, they're actually making it more difficult. And quite frankly, I'm not sure how you achieve savings either on the administrative costs, which are substantial for buying things, or on the actual cost of goods and services when you add and continually add regulations and reporting requirements and oversight requirements to the process. I'm not saying that oversight's inappropriate.
Right. It's a balancing issue, right? And just on that reporting, you know, one of the things I've always said, data is not a free good, right? The more you ask, you know, industry to report on data, that's an operational cost, and it works it into what, you know, the government ultimately and the taxpayer ultimately pay, in my view. So at a certain point, there's got to be a balance there, right, between the benefits of the data versus the cost of getting the data. And
yeah,
I don't know if we're having that discussion right now.
We don't seem to be having that discussion. And what's worse, in many cases, the data has already been provided once, actually as part of the transaction itself. And because we do not have the capability at the federal government level, and actually I'm unaware of that capability existing at the state or local government level either, to capture the data during the transaction so that neither the government nor industry needs to report it again, right. That inability to do that is actually increasing the cost. It decreases transparency. And of course, the average taxpayer is sitting at home scratching their head trying to figure out why the government doesn't know what it's buying or how much it's paying for what it's buying on a daily basis.
Right. Well, that's why often you see the government turning to the contractors to get the data, because the data that it has, it can't manage or can't figure out sort of collectively or even within an agency what has actually transpired. So in fact, to actually get some usable data, they do turn to the contractors as opposed to what they already have in house.
Right. And in no small part because, well, as you read the rules that come out, their analysis of what it's cost to actually provide that additional data, which is, it's not additional data, to provide the data a second or in some cases a third time in a different format to a different system, is the calculations are incredibly low. So they think
right.
It doesn't cost anything. And then even worse is they never do an aggregation over the cost of, or over the course of any particular period on what those costs are. So, for example, when you see the figures in the rules as they're published, that's based upon that rule alone, not including or aggregating the previous 2, 3, 4, 5, 10, 20 rules that they've published in the last quarter, three quarters, or a year.
That's a great point. I haven't really thought of it that way too, but it's almost like it's a stovepiped approach, right? It's like, how much does this particular data requirement, you know, essentially create in terms of a burden without looking at it, you know, collectively, you know, as to what the enterprise as a whole is requiring of its contractors. So interesting stuff, David, but right now we've come up on our first break. So right now we do have to take a break, but when we come back, we'll be talking more with David Drapkin. He is Corporate Director for Acquisition Policy at Northrop Grumman, and we'll be talking more about communication and government. Maybe we'll talk a little bit, transition to some Mythbusters and David's thoughts on that. You're listening to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio 1500 AM.
Government year-end is fast approaching. Look to GSA Advantage and the Han Company now and anytime you're challenged with a compressed time frame or to do more but spend less. Now more than 400 of Han's newest and top models are available online and at great manufacturer direct prices. You'll find multi-purpose chairs, smart desk solutions, durable storage cabinets, contemporary conference tables, and more to fit any office need. All meet or exceed government sustainability requirements, too. To shop Han Direct, go to gsaadvantage.gov and type Han's contract number 27F, like furniture, 0015S, like Sam, in the search bar. That's 27F0015S. When you need office furniture, GSA Advantage is a quick, safe way to buy online, and Han lets you stretch your budget without compromising quality or style. Buy Han Direct. Go to gsaadvantage.gov and search contract 27F0015S today.
My advice to you, until they upgrade the system, simply turn off PhotoStream on your iPhone the next time you're in Vegas, and then it doesn't go anywhere.
Okay.
Or else, change your Vegas behavior, or else, don't take pictures while you're in Vegas. So now, once you've deleted all the photos in the PhotoStream, you've got to then go to the camera roll and delete those individually.
Stratford University's Tech Talk Radio, Saturday mornings from 9 to 10 on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
If you are facing advanced illness or the end of life of a loved one, peace of mind is in short supply. Fortunately, pain-free comfort care is available from the Washington Home and Community Hospices, a not-for-profit organization with a holistic team of doctors, nurses, caregivers, social workers, chaplains, and volunteers. The team comes to you in your home or wherever you call home in D.C., Montgomery, or Prince George's County. For your peace of mind, call them day or night for a complimentary consultation at 866-234-7742.
Concerned about your health? Then be sure to catch the groundbreaking radio show Essentials of Healthy Living, brought to you by Village Green Apothecary in Bethesda. Join hosts Dana Lake and Kevin Passero as they bring you the latest news about traditional and alternative medicine, dietary supplements, nutrition, and healthy living. Tune in every Sunday at 10 a.m. on Federal News Radio. Visit MyVillageGreen.com, listen to past shows, and discover other healthy living resources. Essentials of Healthy Living is sponsored by Enzymatic Therapy and Nordic Naturals.
When every moment matters and a hand reaches out, when someone gives blood and a life is saved, that moment when heartbreak turns to hope, you're there through the American Red Cross. Every day, the Red Cross responds to nearly 200 neighborhood emergencies, and your support makes it possible. Use this moment to join us today. Visit redcross.org.
Hey man, what's up? Angie went to Walmart and got this cool Pioneer HD radio receiver, and now she's like, I don't know.
Simple stuff. Check out the buyer's guide at hdradio.com.
Cool buyer's guide. Oh, here's the Pioneer DEH-44, under $120 at Walmart. Angie, hip and smart.
See, dude, hdradio.com has the answers you need, and Walmart has the Pioneer with built-in HD radio technology you want. Now all you need to do is learn how to talk to girls.
Learn about HD radio technology at hdradio.com. More radio, more value.
Hey ladies, I'm Jill Sorensen, Caps beat reporter from Comcast SportsNet. Want to see hockey from a woman's perspective? Then visit scarletcaps.com to sign up for Club Scarlet for free. Members receive an exclusive newsletter, a chance to win great prizes, and invitations to members-only events, including hockey and heels. Check out scarletcaps.com for the latest blogs and info. To join, log on to scarletcaps.com now.
Hi, this is O'Donna Matthews. What does three decades of service add up to? For the Capital Area Food Bank, it includes these important numbers. Distributing 25 million pounds of food to nearly 500,000 people through a network of 700 partner agencies. 30 years, it's a long time, but the mission continues to make sure that no one is left hungry. To learn more, contribute, or volunteer, visit CapitalAreaFoodBank.org.
With a $1.2 trillion cut to federal spending expected over the next decade, agencies need to consider more than individual programs. They have to dramatically change the way they do business. Join AFSCIA Bethesda February 24th at the Bethesda North Marriott for its annual federal budget preview as a distinguished panel of CIOs, including Richard Spires, Roger Baker, Chris Smith, and Rob Carey, discuss what technologies and initiatives will continue to drive IT spending in 2013. Register today at afsciabethesda.org/febbreakfast.
Welcome back to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today we are talking to David Drapkin. David is the Corporate Director for Acquisition Policy at Northrop Grumman. And we've been talking in our first segment, we talked a little bit about, the quote, and I put in quotes after David, you know, set me straight, the pendulum swing. And just in reality, what we're looking at here, and in large part, is the demands of the government in the context of war situations in terms of how dealing with contractors. And I thought that was a great point, David, whether it's not necessarily really the pendulum swing, it's the times we live in and the circumstances that lead to these type of situations. And when we took a break, David, you were talking a little bit about data collection and communication and engaging government and how difficult that is today. And I know, our mutual friend, Dan Gordon, when he was administrator of OFPP, issued the Mythbusters memo and encourage contracting officers and agencies to increase communications with industry, particularly in acquisition planning phase, to try to better develop requirements. And, so at the same time, there's these challenges there. There was a recognition that communication is a good thing, and I just wonder what your thoughts on that are.
Well, you remember, Roger, that when you and I started in contracts a long time ago.
that's kind, David.
We actually had a rule that nobody could talk to the contractor except the contracting officer. And you may remember,
because
you and
that.
I both worked in the legal offices in the early parts of our career, advising people that it was illegal or against the rules. If it wasn't a violation of a law, it was a violation of a regulation,
right,
for them to talk directly to a contractor, and only the contracting officer could do that. And you may also recall that as part of the reinvention of government, we decided in the mid-90s to rewrite FAR Part 15. And when we did, we specifically eliminated those provisions which prohibited other people from talking to contractors. And in fact, we wrote in many things in FAR Part 15 to encourage the government to engage in discussions with contractors in order to do market research and to understand better what the marketplace had to order, instead of going out and directing that the industry build something to a particular government spec. And
right, I remember that.
And we were pretty proud.
Fundamental change.
And I think many of us were pretty proud that we were able to not only make the change, but that the workforce welcomed it, because many of them felt constrained that in the acquisition process, they really couldn't get enough information about what might be available. It might cost less, might perform at a higher level. And they were often doomed to repeat failures in acquisitions. And the FAR Part 15 language change, which we made, gave them a way to improve that process. But somehow, and maybe it was the result of the buildup to the wars, to the two wars, but somehow people began to get the idea again that talking to contractors was a bad thing. And in fact, by the time Dan Gordon got to OFPP, there were many people who weren't using all of the tools that FAR Part 15 provided to communicate more often, more frequently, more openly with contractors to really look at what the commercial marketplace had to offer, not only in terms of products and services, but also the processes that the commercial marketplace used in buying and selling those things in the commercial marketplace. And finally, Dan, to his credit, had to take the steps of writing a letter telling everybody that, you know, you actually can talk to a contractor. You can actually bring them in on a one-on-one meeting. And he called it Mythbusters. And it's unfortunate that Dan left us when he did. Good for Dan. He's doing great over at GW, by the way. He likes those plugs. GW Law School.
Right, yes, absolutely. I'm going to have him on sometime soon, so he'll get to plug it directly himself.
But I do believe that Joe, who has been named to replace Dan.
Joe Jordan, right?
From the SBA.
Yes.
I believe Joe Jordan will pick up what Dan had started and continue it. I think I've heard him talk about it when he was at the SBA himself and how important the Mythbusters were to, for example, giving greater access to government procurement to small businesses. Because small businessmen can talk to government buyers and more importantly, government program managers to show them the services or products they have availabilities, the capabilities they can bring to bear to solve that program manager's problems. The part of the difficulty, though, I suspect, at least my observations have been, is that these people on the government side have been so busy. I mean, keep in mind that the procurement dollars doubled from 1999 till last year, over doubled. And the amount of work these people had to do was huge. And the time constraints on the work, getting product and services to the warfighter, getting product and services to the people in Homeland Security who were facing tremendous threats, there was a tremendous pressure to do things as quickly as possible so that people had the tools they needed to fight the war on terrorism, whether it was domestically or externally. And in response to that, they didn't have time, or they didn't make time, or they didn't understand the importance of taking the time to talk to industry, to really investigate what was available to them to solve their problems and to bring the best that the commercial marketplace has to offer to bear, reducing the cost of R&D for the government to develop it and reducing the cost for the government to open a line specifically for its own use in production facilities at the same time.
Yeah, and I think that's a fair point that, you know, the balance between having to get the job done and all the responsibilities that are placed on contracting officers and acquisition professionals these days versus trying to find that time to talk to companies and improve the outcomes in the long run. It's a hard road to hoe in a lot of respects, which sort of turns me to the next topic I want to address with you, and that is sort of just the state of the government acquisition workforce. And I know that's one of your favorite issues and challenges that we as a community have dealt with over the years. And I'd just like to get some of your thoughts on where we are and where you see things headed.
Well, I think first that this administration certainly is due kudos for their efforts at increasing the size of the acquisition workforce, both the 1102 workforce and the program management workforce and the various other skills and capabilities in the acquisition workforce. There has been a demonstrated effort to do that. Certainly DOD has been working hard at it, as well as DHS and GSA and many other agencies. Still, however, if you take...
Well, you know what, David, on that however... We do have to take our next break, but when we return, we'll be talking more with David Drapkin, Corporate Director for Acquisition Policy at Northrop Grumman, and we'll continue our discussion of the acquisition workforce, and David can let us know his however. You're listening to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Government year-end is fast approaching. Look to GSA Advantage and the Han Company now and anytime you're challenged with a compressed time frame or to do more but spend less. Now more than 400 of Han's newest and top models are available online and at great manufacturer direct prices. You'll find multi-purpose chairs, smart desk solutions, durable storage cabinets, contemporary conference tables, and more to fit any office need. All meet or exceed government sustainability requirements, too. To shop Han Direct, go to gsaadvantage.gov and type Han's contract number 27F, like furniture, 0015S, like Sam, in the search bar. That's 27F0015S. When you need office furniture, GSA Advantage is a quick, safe way to buy online, and Han lets you stretch your budget without compromising quality or style. Buy Han Direct. Go to gsaadvantage.gov and search contract 27F0015S today.
Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, your source for federal news now.
The leader in informational seminars on federal benefits, financial, and retirement planning. NITP was established in 1984 and is 100% devoted to federal planning seminars. The mission is to educate federal employees and enable them to make fully informed decisions regarding their financial futures and retirement options. Through a variety of teaching platforms and seminars, NITP has the experience to help with your planning needs. Visit NITPinc.com. That's NITPinc.com for more information.
When every moment matters and a hand reaches out, when someone gives blood and a life is saved, that moment when heartbreak turns to hope, you're there through the American Red Cross. Every day, the Red Cross responds to nearly 200 neighborhood emergencies, and your support makes it possible. Use this moment to join us today. Visit redcross.org.
What is the value of a central provider like GSA and its federal acquisition service? How is FAS managing in an era of fiscal constraint? Join host Michael Keegan as he explores these questions and much more with Stephen Kempf, Commissioner, GSA's Federal Acquisition Service, next week on the Business of Government Hour.
Your new Cocker Spaniel is waiting to meet you, and you don't have to travel very far. This weekend and almost every weekend, Oldies But Goodies Cocker Spaniel Rescue holds at least one adoption show in the greater D.C. area. Find out where we'll be this weekend by checking out CockerSpanielRescue.com. Stop by to meet the many homeless Cockers of all ages who are looking for their new home. These dogs have already been spayed or neutered and have all their shots. For more information on adoption, fostering, or volunteering, visit CockerSpanielRescue.com.
And now the Federal Living Report, brought to you by WEPA.
Has low morale led to retirements in your office? More than 70% of the federal employees who took a Federal News Radio survey say yes. The biggest morale killers, they say, are the pay freeze followed by ineffective managers and Fed bashing from Congress. Over half of the 1,700 Feds surveyed, though, say their managers could do more. They say supervisors could offer time off awards, team building events, and simple thank yous to build morale.
Attention new federal employees. WEPA is currently offering up to $100,000 of life insurance on a guaranteed basis to those individuals within 180 days of their original federal hire date. No medical exam or physician's reports required. WEPA, a nonprofit association founded in 1943, provides life insurance at rates significantly less than the federal program. WEPA also offers premium refunds and a college scholarship program. Visit WAEPA.org to learn more. Once again, WAEPA.org.
My family struggled, and it was assumed that while I would go to college, I would have to pay for it myself.
Charlie wasn't sure how to get the money she needed for college. Then she found out about federal student aid and the FAFSA.
I don't think I quite realized what a huge deal actually graduating was. Federal student aid definitely made that happen.
Need help planning and paying for college? Find out more at college.gov.
My name is Charlie, and this is my story.
You don't need dams, waterfalls, or waves to get hydroelectric power anymore. A new technology is tapping energy from even slow-moving streams. Engineers have long known that cylindrical objects in the path of moving water can create strong swirls that often need to be suppressed to prevent damage. But Michael Bernitsis, a University of Michigan engineer, saw things differently.
It dawned on me that we can possibly do exactly the opposite, enhance these kind of destructive phenomena, control them, and harness the energy.
Bernitsis built ladder-like devices attached to electromagnets. When placed in a stream, the rungs both create spinning currents of water and are allowed to move in the turbulence, generating electricity. Then he lined the devices up in a way that mimics schools of fish, which
basically glide between vortices generated by the fish ahead of them.
Bernitsis says such positioning can amplify power generation, even in gently flowing rivers. More at nae.edu/radio. With the National Academy of Engineering, Randy Atkins, Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Welcome back to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Today we are talking to David Drapkin, Corporate Director for Acquisition Policy at Northrop Grumman, and we've been talking about the state acquisition generally. And last segment, we started a discussion about the acquisition workforce. And David, you were about to give us your however. So go ahead, go for it.
let me begin again by reminding you that whatever I say is my opinion and not that of my employer, Northrop Grumman.
Hey, Dave, do you need me to say that for you a few times too?
Well, you know, I'm not in the government anymore, but I can't. Well,
I understand.
However, it goes to the fact that if you look at the numbers in 1991. The population of 1102s in the federal government was over 33,000. Today, it's a little over 28,000, might be 29,000. The population of 1102s in 1991 did about $150 billion worth of work. And with fewer 1102s, they're doing over three times yep. as much work today. And so while they've made improvements in terms of increasing the acquisition workforce, there's still a long way to go. You're still asking people to do an incredible amount of work. It's much more complicated work. In 1991, predominantly people bought using sealed bids, picking the lowest price.
And they were buying things.
And they were buying goods, not services. And today, they're using best value, which requires judgment and intellectual capacity to actually understand what best value is, not only the ability to understand it, but the ability to articulate it and then figure out what does represent the best value.
Right. Yep.
And just the sheer numbers involved. And so there's a long way to go. In the same sense, there's an issue of training and education. In FASA in the 1990s, which we talked about in, I think, the first segment briefly, mm-hmm. when we made the changes to improve things and to improve access to commercial items, the government, did not spend, and I'm partly to blame for it, we did not spend the time to develop at our schoolhouses programs on teaching government people how to do pricing in the commercial marketplace. How do you determine whether a price is fair and reasonable under CECA in the context of buying something that is commercial, where they don't have to give you the cost buildup information? You have to, as the government buyer, figure out whether, you know, that's a fair market price. And it's not easy as it seems. The schoolhouses is a real topic, which I think somebody could take up. It's one of my soapboxes as a citizen. The federal government does a lot of training, FAI and DAU, and let's not forget the VA Academy.
Yes, absolutely.
As well as the Treasury Acquisition Institute. They all do as good a job as they can, but they need to have a broader focus for the government. It's probably time to look at consolidating into a single government acquisition university with multiple colleges
sure.
for defense buying, colleges for program management, colleges for commercial buying and services buying, which is a specialty unto its own. And it might actually wind up saving money. It needs also to focus today, particularly in budget requirements, on on more virtual use of the virtual training, although classroom training is really important for some of these topics, and the sharing of ideas face to face is very important. There are a great many parts of the acquisition curriculum that, once updated, could be taught virtually and reduce the cost to government. And I think you'll find that industry, for the most part, is using more virtual training, more online courses, understanding the importance of face-to-face courses for certain topics. And that's one area where the government doesn't seem to be particularly interested at the moment in terms of saving money. I mean, DAU does a great job, gets lots of awards. They produce really great courses. They buy some of the toughest things that the government buys.
Absolutely, Big A acquisition.
But they're not the only ones. But over the last 10 years, they've grown physically. And not only do they have their facilities at Fort Belvoir, which are excellent, they have facilities in Huntsville. They have facilities in other places in the country. Instead of using local colleges and universities to deliver courses where students are, they still bring people into classrooms for long periods of time. And I know that both Frank Anderson, when he was there, and Katrina McFarland, who has now been identified by the president to be the next deputy Undersecretary of Defense for Acquisition. I know that they are looking at those issues, but it's not just for DOD, it's for the whole government, because places like GSA, Treasury, and other places, they also need training. Right. And they wind up taking a back seat to the agency who owns the schoolhouse.
Right, so you're saying there's an opportunity here to leverage resources, potentially.
I think there's a tremendous opportunity to save money and to, at the same time, improve the education and training available to the acquisition workforce. And by the way, that should also include access for industry to those same courses, because there's no reason to segregate the two communities from the training. We sit down at the bargaining table. It makes a negotiation a lot easier if everybody at the table understands the rules the same way, and what they're focusing is the quality, the technical compliance, the price, the delivery requirements, instead of having different ideas of what one term or condition may mean or have on the particular contract.
Well, and you had, just want to shift a little bit on this now, and you had mentioned, you know, the volume of transactions that, in a way, they've exploded over the last 10 years, and the number of acquisition professionals out there to actually handle those at the same time has gone down. You know, what role do you think contract, you know, duplication has in that, or in terms of, you know, all the, you know, the numerous multiple award contracts that are out there, contract vehicles, you know, is that something that's part of that, or just in general, I'd like to get your thoughts on contract duplication.
You know, this has been a topic which, when I was in government for the short time I worked for Senator Collins on her staff on the committee on the Hill, and industry have all talked about, and that is to say that the proliferation of contracts throughout the government, particularly IDIQ contracts, whether they're GWACs or whether they're not GWACs, and GAO, I believe, has done a number of studies and identified the numbers of contracts across the government. Of course, for a company, you want to be on whatever contract
right.
that your customer wants to use.
Right. You can't afford to be locked out of a market, right?
But the cost to compete for every single IDIQ contract that comes open that your customer may use, that's a pretty high cost. And a company like mine even has difficulty budgeting the sufficient BNP dollars to do that. The small companies really have to make hard choices. And if they pick the wrong contract, they may wind up not being able to compete subsequently for work from potential customers in the government. The discipline needed in the government as a whole begins with the realization that acquisition is really a horizontal function of the federal government. It's not a vertical function of each department and agency. And the only way to really solve this problem is for OMB, specifically OFPP, to get involved and exercise a strong hand over whether an agency is going to have an IDIQ or not.
Right. And David, right now I have to exercise a strong hand and take our last break. So right now we will take a break, but when we return, we'll be talking more with David Drapkin, Corporate Director for Acquisition Policy at Northrop Grumman. And we'll talk a little bit more about contract duplication and move into a few other areas of interest. You're listening to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio 1500 AM.
Are you a civilian employee of the intelligence community, the Department of Defense, or the Department of State? You may be eligible for term life insurance from GEBA, the Government Employees Benefit Association, with coverage issued by the Prudential Insurance Company of America. Term life insurance helps provide security for your family in case something happens to you. It's money to pay your mortgage or your children's college expenses, or help ensure your spouse can retire in comfort. GEBA's group life plan offers affordable rates with coverage amounts up to $600,000. Civilian employees of the intelligence community, the Department of Defense, or the Department of State. Don't let these exclusive benefits pass you by. Start planning today and get peace of mind for your family and protection for their future. Visit GEBA.com/termlife to learn more or to download an enrollment form. That's GEBA.com/termlife. Group term life coverage for GEBA is issued by the Prudential Insurance Company of America, 751 Broad Street, Newark, New Jersey, 07102. Contract series 83500.
Tune in Sunday morning from 9 to 10 a.m. for Executive Leaders Radio. This show features four of the D.C. region's finest business leaders. Through each of these compelling interviews, these high-achieving leaders become relatable role models who share how they were able to build their enterprise, their personal secrets of success, and opportunities that lie ahead. The show inspires, entertains, and is full of wisdom unheard elsewhere. Tune in Sundays at 9 a.m. for Executive Leaders Radio.
Soon this little baby I'm singing to sleep will start to walk. Before I know it, I'll be dropping her off at school, beaming when she walks up to accept her diploma, or holding back tears as she takes those big steps down the aisle. But before she takes all those steps, she and thousands like her will need you to take yours. Join March for Babies to help make her steps possible.
March for Babies!
Start your team today at marchforbabies.org.
Arming your home security system gives you peace of mind, but are you paying $30, $40, $50 or more in monitoring fees? Switch to Ackerman Security Systems, the metro area's most trusted name in security, and pay just $18.95 a month. That's right, $18.95 a month, and no cost to switch. Don't have a system? Then Ackerman offers the latest technology, including wireless monitoring. Call by Wednesday and get 3 months of basic monitoring free when you switch or start service with Ackerman. Call 888-999-1070, AckermanSecurity.com.
The men and women of our National Guard and Reserve Forces are working hard on the battlefield and here at home. Employer support of the Guard and Reserve is working just as hard for them. For over 36 years, ESGR has paved the way for greater understanding between our Guard and Reserve Forces and their civilian employers, promoting a culture where all American employers support and honor the military service of their employees. Together, we all serve. To learn more, visit www.esgr.mil.
Hi, welcome to Best Buy. Interested in boomboxes?
Yeah, I just got the iPhone 4S, and I want a docking system for when I'm at home.
Easy answer. The Insignia boombox with HD radio technology receives all the HD2, HD3 channels here in town and has iTunes tagging for your iPhone 4S.
Oh yeah, iTunes tagging is cool. Tag and buy songs you hear on HD radio stations.
Yep, and it's only $99.
Wow, $99 and works with iPhone 4S? Lead the way.
Learn about HD radio technology at HDradio.com. More radio, more value.
Listen to Fed Talk on Federal News Radio 1500 AM every Friday morning at 11, brought to you by the attorneys of Shaw, Bransford, and Roth. Fed Talk features live interviews with guests from the federal community sharing their insights on issues that affect you. Call in or email questions or comments to fedtalk@federalnewsradio.com. Fed Talk is sponsored by GEICO. This week on Fed Talk, host Bill Bransford will be joined by the Federal Managers Association to learn about its upcoming annual conference and training.
There are those who dedicate themselves to a sense of honor, to a life of courage, and a commitment to something greater than themselves. They have always defended this nation and each other. They still do. The few, the proud,
Industry and acquisition. One doesn't exist without the other. Get the latest on how the two come together with Acquisition and Industry Thursday on Federal News Radio. Thursday mornings at 11, listen for Amtower Off-Center, a uniquely sideways view of B2G from the marketing perspective. Thursday afternoons at 2, tune into Off the Shelf with Roger Waldron for all things procurement. And Thursdays at 3, join in-depth host Francis Rose for industry chatter about policy, regulations, and trends. Acquisition and Industry Thursday, only on Federal News Radio. 1500 AM.
Welcome back to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today we are talking to Dave Drapkin, Corporate Director for Acquisition Policy at Northrop Grumman. And when we took our break, we were talking about contract duplication. And David, you started to talk a little bit about OMB and OFP, in particular OFPP's role. Can you pick that up where you left off?
Yeah, I mean, because if OFPP does not exercise that authority, the agencies have demonstrated that they can't or won't exercise the authority, because many of those agencies operate just like GSA and use the excess funds from their contract fees to fund other activities within the agency. That's not right or wrong. It's just a reality. And certainly companies can't solve this problem. I mean, when I was in government, I remember having a meeting with an industry association. I remember them complaining about the duplication and of contracts and asking us, the government, to exercise some discipline. And, you know, on my response and glib response, and now I realize fully an inappropriate response was, well, just don't bid on the contract. Well, the reality is, if you don't bid on the contract and your customer decides to use it, it's not your customer anymore. It's somebody else's.
It's almost like you can't afford to do it, and you can't afford not to do it. So you're sort of, it's a quandary for industry. Right?
And with the number of dollars that will be available for procurement going down, and they are going down, as you witnessed the budget that the president delivered just the beginning of this week, and the discussions of the programs that won't be solicited for, that are being canceled. I mean, the number of dollars are going to get smaller, and this will have it'll have an impact on all size companies, but the companies who will see the greatest amount of impact are going to be small businesses. It's the same thing happened back in the 90s when we paid the peace dividend. It's just the nature of the game. It's not because the government doesn't want to do business with them. They do, but the number of dollars available will be reduced. So having lots and lots of contracts for which you get no return after the initial competition, the only way you get a return is if you can compete for a task order. It gets to be more than, first of all, it costs the government money. It costs the taxpayers money. It's inefficient. It doesn't drive prices to the best in the commercial marketplace and the best value. It just needs to be addressed. And again, Congress needs to tell the executive branch to do it, because apparently the executive branch hasn't been able to get around to doing it before.
One thing I did want to ask you about, and you mentioned the GSA schedules, and I just wondered if you had any thoughts with regard to some of the recent changes, whether it's, you know, Section 863, that I think it was 2009 Defense Authorization Act, that sort of extended the competitive order requirements that DOD was living under for the last almost 10 years almost, government-wide, and also the, you know, the discretionary small business set-asides, that Section 1331 of the Small Business Job Act. I'm giving you like compound question here, Dave, like two different topics in one long rambling sentence. But, you know, both those areas, the competition requirements of the schedules and then the new discretionary set-asides. Any thoughts on those two issues?
Well, first of all, I think 863 was the right answer. You and I both know that despite the rules that the schedules had requiring competition, many of the customers of GSA prior to the statutory change, I think it was in actually 2004, 2003, requiring DOD to get competition, and then 863 requiring all civilian agents. Many of the customers, the schedules program, just went to one offeror, and that was it, one vendor, and that was it. And that was not what the schedules were intended for, and GSA could not practically police that. And so the statute, I think, is the right thing, telling you that, you know, you have to solicit everybody. And of course, you were there when they created eBuy,
right,
which makes it easy to solicit every vendor and get three vendors or do a justification for why you're not. There's no reason not to get competition on the schedules, because the schedules themselves have at least three vendors, at least they're supposed to on every schedule, who could offer the product or service you're looking for. And competition is healthy, and it promotes it's healthy for the marketplace. It's healthy for the government in terms of getting best value. And, of course, the taxpayer gets the benefit of it. So I think that that's a good thing.
Mm-hmm.
The set-aside issue is somewhat more difficult. Small businesses, as you also know, predominate in terms of holding schedules, the number of schedules that GSA has. I think they have 64-70% of the schedules.
Something like that, yeah.
And without the set-aside provisions, the application of the rule of two, the last time I looked at numbers, they were getting 34-35% of the
dollars,
business.
Yeah. Yeah.
Actual business off the schedule, which is better than at many other agencies across the government, where they're barely meeting the 23% goal for prime contracts. So on the one hand, the schedules don't seem to be a problem in terms of small business participation. On the other hand, for purchases under $100,000, the application or the use of set-asides might not have been a bad idea. But to apply it to the whole schedules program, I think defeats the purpose of the schedules, creates more opportunity for litigation in terms of whether a company is actually a small business,
right,
or not.
New compliance issues.
And I think it's really not consistent with the commercial marketplace, which is what the schedules were supposed to be emulating in the first place, a commercial alternative, readily available and easy to use. So, but please don't walk away from what I've just said by saying Dave Drabkin's against small businesses. He's not. He's
always
been for small
businesses. Well, David, one of the things
I
can say, I truly say that when you and I were there, schedules were created in terms of the procedures and framework to try to maximize opportunities for small businesses consistent with the commercial practices, and I think we collectively succeeded in that.
Every year.
Yeah, every year. We have got about a minute left, David, and I wanted to just give you like 30 seconds, and I know it's not fair, but if and I appreciate your personal views today. I've enjoyed this discussion, but do you have any one thought about looking back on your career, what's the biggest sort of fundamental change in procurement that was positive, that you would note? One of the things I like to mention is the fact that the commercial item purchasing was, came into being through FASA.
It's kind of hard.
It is hard. It's not a fair question. I recognize that.
But I think the answer is the quality of the acquisition workforce and its dedication, its capabilities and skills increased continually. It didn't go as fast as any of us would have liked. It didn't go as far as any of us would have liked. But I can say that the people who are doing the work today are better equipped, better skilled. They're more dedicated, if they could be, than the people who were doing the work 40, 50 years ago. I can use that number because most of them still aren't around.
Right. That's fair.
And they won't
that's
be calling
good.
Me up.
Right. Right. Well, that's a great note to end the show on. And I want to thank David Drabkin, Corporate Director for Acquisition Policy at Northrop Grumman, for joining me today. I'm Roger Waldron, and this is Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio 1500 AM.
You've been listening to Off the Shelf with Roger Waldron of the Coalition of Government Procurement. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear the entire show on our website, federalnewsradio.com. Off the Shelf, Tuesday mornings at 10:30, only on Federal News Radio 1500 AM.